Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with AIB, working alongside Irish communities towards a low carbon future. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, in the Green Scene today, why bats, which we often fear and refer to as flying rats, are actually really important for human health. But first, a new type of timber. I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So, a new type of timber.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we all know trees are very good at capturing carbon. They're natural carbon sinks. And in fact, the biggest and oldest tree in the world has captured enough carbon to account for one American's entire carbon use for their life. So they're really important. And we often classify them into two types, hardwood and softwood. And again, we would have had conversations here in Ireland that some of the softwoods like the spruce and the pine, they grow more quickly. They don't overall capture as much carbon because their wood can be less dense.
We actually use them for roof trusses and so on.
I mean, that's sort of been accepted wisdom. But that has been challenged in a new research that's come out now from Jagiellonian University in Poland. And they went down to the nanoscale structure of wood. So that means you're getting down to things that are 6,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair. You're down looking at the actual cells in the wood. And they went to the Botanic Gardens near Cambridge and they took samples of the wood. And because they were so close to Cambridge University, they could get this wood into the lab in perfect condition, almost still like living wood. And they used a technique called low temperature scanning electron microscopy, where they cool the samples very, very slowly so the ice crystals don't distort the tissue. Yeah. And they were able to look at them in these very powerful microscopes. And they were really surprised because most of the wood did fall into those two categories, hardwood or softwood. And they could define that by looking at little tiny fibre structures in the wood cells.
Now, and the hardwood takes longer to mature.
It does take longer to mature. And of course, it's denser and heavier usually. We're all familiar with that when we pick up a piece of wood. But they found these little structures called macrofibrils. And they found in the hardwoods, these were 15 nanometres wide. So they were narrower and they were packed more tightly together. In the softwood, they were 25 nanometres wide, so a bit wider. But there was one species of tree where they were 20 nanometres wide, so straight in the middle of a hardwood and a softwood. And these were a tree called the tulip tree, or some people call them a yellow poplar tree. And they're native actually to Asia and North America. We don't get them so much here. But we've always known that they stored a lot of carbon. So forests that have these trees can store up to six times more carbon than other forests. But we never knew why. And now we think this might be why. And we think it sort of relates back to how these trees evolved. Because this branch of trees, it's actually the Magnolia family.
Yeah.
Sort of radiated on Earth at a time when there was very, very low levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, about 50 million years ago.
So it had to learn to suck a lot in for its growth.
Because, of course, trees use carbon dioxide to create their energy and their sugar inside. So we now think this might be why they evolved to be really, really good at sucking carbon out of the atmosphere. And the scientists that discovered this are really excited because they are now wondering, well, what if we could use bioengineering to get this type of wood to grow in other species? We might be able to make, you know, super carbon sucking trees even better than some of them already are.
Now, the question is, how long does it take the tulip tree to grow? Does it grow as fast as one of the lighter woods or as slowly as one of the hardwoods? Or is it Goldilocks, somewhere in between?
It's a pretty fast grower, particularly when it's young. It can grow a couple of feet in a year, actually. So this would be good news
if you could bioengineer some of these fast-growing trees. You get loads of carbon sequestration very quickly.
Absolutely, and they have some of the good qualities of hardwoods as well, which we know can be a bit more resilient and perhaps sometimes better at supporting biodiversity. So really interesting and challenging our traditional view of hard and soft.
When we talk about bats, I mean, there are all sorts of myths about bats. They're flying rats. If they get into your hair, you know, this kind of stuff.
I know.
And were they responsible for COVID?
And they do harbour a lot of different kinds of viruses, you know, particularly other kinds of coronavirus. So yes, you're right. They've kind of got a bad reputation, you know, everything from Dracula to COVID. But this is a new and important paper that was published in the journal Science about maybe why we need to rethink our relationship with bats. And really it started with bats getting sick. And this happened in about 2006, the mid-2000s, where several species of bat in New England, North America, started to get sick. And they got sick from this fungal disease called white nose syndrome, because their nose would get covered in this fungus. It would interrupt their sleep. They would lose energy and eventually they would die. And this was probably a fungus that was imported from Europe by humans. And an environmental economist called I.L. Frank, working at the University of Chicago, looked at what happened when these bats started to disappear. And of course, the reason why this is interesting is because bats are massive natural insect eaters.
Yeah.
They serve farmers in the area by eating, gobbling up insects all night. Some of them can eat up to 40% of their body weight in insects. And what this economist found was that the use of pesticides went up as a number of bats went down. So farmers started spraying up to over 30% more pesticides, more insecticides in the counties in North America and the states where these bats were disappearing. And I suppose more worryingly, they looked at other trends. They looked at trends in human health, and they found a significant increase in infant mortality and in fetal and birth defects and these kind of things.
So this is to do with the chemicals. Because more chemicals, because of less bats.
Well, it's incredibly difficult to link causality to these kind of environmental impacts because, I mean, look, we're out in the environment. It's very hard to know exactly what is happening in an individual case. But we do know that insecticides and pesticides can be harmful to particularly young children and fetuses. I mean, if you go to the garden centre and you buy something for your garden, you'll see that written on it. Mm. Make sure you keep this out of the way of young children. So we know these things are more harmful to young children. And they did look at other potential impacts. So they looked at economic data. They looked at drug use data. They looked at weather data to see if there was anything else that would correlate in the same way the loss of the bats would. And they found that nothing else did. And it is interesting because this isn't the only example, although we are only starting to understand this, because there was research in India by the same scientist that found that when vultures died off in India, there was far more rotting animal carcasses left around the place. And that actually led to two things: waterborne infections as these carcasses infected the water, but also a rise in feral dogs and then an increase in rabies from those dogs. So it kind of underlines for us how sensitive our ecosystem is and how we as humans are so dependent on the other creatures around us keeping our ecosystem balanced and keeping diseases under control.
They've all got to do their job.
They all have their job to do, yeah.
All right, Ruth, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Thank you very much.